everybody. Welcome back to another great edition of Talking Takes. I am, of course, Scott Girard. Joining me, of course, as always, Tommy Johnson and Daniel Zollinger. Got probably another quick one for you this week. I mean, there's really boiling it down to the last of the fall and winter sports. Just some NFL games, maybe some LSU basketball games to get into. I don't know. Hope you guys had another good week. I mean, another winter storm behind us. I don't think we're going to go 3-for-3, but you never know. So I want to see how you guys are doing before we talk about anything. Tommy, anything new since last week?
Man, I mean, good to be with you. Good to be talking about the AFC, NFC championships. And then like you mentioned, some LSU basketball. So, but not much going on my end other than watching these sports. Good to be talking about it with you.
Yep. I experienced the tail end of that winter storm. I was in Louisiana this past weekend, South Louisiana, for a wedding, and it was kind of the snow was melting. I was worried that I wasn't gonna be able to fly in. The airport was closed up until the day that I got there, but we made it fine. And then seeing snow in South Louisiana and Cajun country was pretty weird, but got a little taste of that, and then back here in Florida now. But yeah, just in time to catch the last conference championship games, and it's sad that we're down to one football game before the long break, so got to enjoy that while it lasts. But it's quote unquote the big one, so even though it may not be the matchup that America was hoping for, but we'll get into that.
Yes, we will. And I think it's interesting because in some years past there was I remember there being like a Super Bowl on January, like yesterday would have been the 26th, and had you bet that had been in Florida at that time, say it was in Tampa, for instance, there'd be snow on the ground, which defeats the whole purpose of hosting all these Super Bowls in these cities where you don't think there's going to be winter weather complications, but God just laughs at us, I think. Anyway, it's last two games. This is it. We now know the Chiefs and Eagles are going to play each other again. I don't know. I thought the NFC Championship game, as much as Jaden and the boys, kind of gave their heart, man, the Eagles just kind of poured it on. And I don't know. I don't know what else you could really say about that. Maybe next year they overachieved for having a rookie quarterback doing as good as they did. But like it or not, it's the Eagles and the Chiefs. I don't know. I'd say the Bills and the Chiefs was probably a little bit better game, although, Chiefs still came out on top. They just looked like the two-time Super Bowl champions. I don't know. Tommy, should I be excited about this game or not? I still don't know what to think about this one.
I don't know if I'm excited, but I mean, I like the Eagles. I don't mind the Eagles. So I kind of like Jalen Hurts. I kind of like Devontae Smith and like what they got going on. I thought they were a very complete team playing against Jaden, which was unfortunate for us. But I thought their defense looked good. They got a lot of pressure on him. I think he threw two picks in that game. I felt like it was just a complete performance for the Eagles, and I'm rooting for them in the Super Bowl. I agree with you on the AFC Championship was maybe a better game, and I'm disappointed that the Bills couldn't take care of it. But man, I don't know what it is. It feels like the Chiefs just have poor Josh Allen's number. I mean, you saw that last play where the tight end, it just knocked out of his hands.
Same with the Ravens, right? Tight end drop.
Yep.
That ended it.
The Eagles game, sadly, the end of the road for Jaden Daniels and the really dynamic rookie season that he's had. Can't take anything away from him there. But yeah, it seemed the scenario was a little bit too big and too bright for the Redskins. They had four turnovers, one interception, and three fumbles. And since the Eagles didn't turn the ball over, that is your deciding margin. They kept plugging it in for six every single time. The Redskins coughed it, Commanders coughed it up, and that's all she wrote for them. So Eagles, very good team top to bottom. Saquon Barkley been dominating, and a good, really good bounce back year after a lot of injuries for him. So looking for him to maybe take home that Super Bowl MVP coming up in 2 weeks. On the other end, the Bills Chiefs was definitely the better game and one that everybody was anticipating, considering the Bills have been riding high, Chiefs perennial favorites, getting to their third straight Super Bowl. You kind of just knew the Chiefs were going to pull it out in the end. Everyone was roasting the refs online. There was a couple of kind of questionable spots there on the end, especially the fourth and one when Josh Allen tried to run it. And it looked like he might have gotten the first down, and the refs ruled him short, and that kind of killed it for the Chiefs. Or killed it for the Bills, excuse me. And then as well as the Chiefs, I don't know if y'all saw the pass where Xavier Worthy kind of caught it with one hand and like pinned it against the ground. It looked like an incompletion to me, but they stuck with the call on the field that was a completed pass, and the Chiefs ended up scoring there. So it's hard to beat one of the best teams in the NFL when they got the refs on their side at home. So Patrick Mahomes leading them to the third straight Super Bowl in a rematch of the game 2 years ago that they narrowly beat the Eagles in. But should be exciting, at least. Good teams. But I think America was hoping that the Bills and probably the Reds, I keep saying it, and the Commanders would be the representatives. But I guess the cream rises to the top eventually. What about you, Scott?
I don't know. You kind of touched on something I was going to bring up, too. It's, you know, just the third aspect of the game, the refs, and how much that would or would not decide. Like, I don't know that it would have changed much in the Eagles. Like, there were some obvious calls missed, but that's any sport, any game, right? Any ref, there can be bad ones, but I don't know if it consistently happens, especially with the Chiefs, but I don't know. I mean, if you're 2-time Super Bowl champs, I feel like luck is generally on your side, but some of the calls can be very egregious, right? Like the drop pass, like you just mentioned. Any other team, and I think if they initiate the review, they're just going to call it a drop pass, but not that game, not that team. So it's remains to be seen. But I mean, like you said, Tommy, Buffalo could have done it. I mean, there was another missed call.
Yeah.
I think it was a first down with Josh like being pushed over the line. Two refs came in. Weirdly enough, they had like different spot lines from the sideline, and then it didn't match up, right? They both saw a different spot. Somehow the Chiefs got the right call for them. So it just always works out that way. So I guess the only answer to that is just beat them, which honestly at this point I hope the Eagles can. I got a buddy who's a big Eagles fan. I guess that's one reason I could probably pull for that, but also for, you know, someone to knock off the Chiefs. It would be cool to see a 3-time Super Bowl champ, but I don't know. Based on some of these calls, you kind of wonder, kind of like with the playoff, you know, Ohio State did their business. All they needed was a chance. All someone else needs is a chance, and maybe they could knock off the king. So why not the Bills? But again, if that tight end would have caught the ball, we wouldn't be talking about referee calls, right? Because it would have been forgotten.
Yeah.
No, you're right.
It's kind of a weird situation with these two teams in the Super Bowl now, where it's the quote from Batman, you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become a villain. Whereas the tail end of the Patriots dynasty with Tom Brady, where the Eagles beat them, I believe, in 2018, and then the Chiefs won in 2020 after the Patriots had a Super Bowl in between. And that was when America was rooting for these upstart teams like the Chiefs and the Eagles to beat the Patriots. And then now we got the Chiefs dynasty instead. And then we kind of the monkey's paw curls, like we got what we were hoping for, and kind of the bad new dynasty. So people always love an upset. And when the favorites win time in and time out, it can get a little frustrating to watch, but should be a good game regardless. In New Orleans at the Superdome, hopefully the city puts on a good show like they always do. They already had their signage all up in the New Orleans airport when I was flying out this past weekend. So, and going to be there again. Actually, Tommy and I both will be around there on Super Bowl weekend in a couple weeks, not for the game itself, but just for some other stuff. So should be a big party in the Big Easy.
And it should be a very safe party in the Big Easy, right? Considering of what happened a few weeks ago, I imagine this is probably going to be the safest Super Bowl that we have seen in New Orleans possibly ever. Or at least if I'm in charge of putting this on, that's what I'm going for.
I wonder if that's going to have any damper on like the ticket sales or anything like that, or if people are just going to kind of go crazy like they normally will. I'm sure it'll, I mean, it's pretty corporate anyhow, so yeah. the businesses will always show up.
Yeah, New Orleans is a big enough draw. Anyway, they'll fill the seats, right? I can't imagine there's going to be a half-sold Super Bowl because of that. Can't be.
I don't think so. I mean, I feel like the tickets are sold out, you know, months, years in advance. So I think it's probably okay. But it's a big, I mean, I know it's a big deal for Louisiana, a big deal for New Orleans. They're pumping it up right now, and a lot of festivities going around the Super Bowl. But, you know, I don't know where I was going with that, but that's a good point by me.
I think you're going to say, let's just make sure the concrete barriers are up. That's it. That's all Tom.
Yeah.
I did want to make a note that this is the first Super Bowl since 2001 that no LSU player is on active roster in the Super Bowl, which is kind of sad because we had had that streak going for a long time. It was 23 years at this point, and LSU would always tweet out the graphic like the week before the Super Bowl. It's like, I guess it had been 23 years in a row. But yeah, no player on either the Eagles or the Chiefs since the Chiefs dealt Clyde Edwards-Helaire earlier this season. Now he's back on the Saints. So maybe they'll kickstart it again next year. But no Tigers to watch, unfortunately.
But, you know, when did they let go of Clyde?
I'm not sure. That it could be. I see where you're going. Like, he could still get a ring. Like,
still gets a ring. He still gets a ring. If he made it past what? OTAs, I think he makes it. I think he gets his ring.
Oh, so, I think he did make it past that.
Streak intact.
I think, don't you think, Daniel? I thought he was on the team at least through the preseason.
Yeah, he was kind of holding himself out on like the, I think he was on the PUP list, unable to play kind of with his like mental health issues or something. I'm not sure I think he was on the active roster though for at least some point in the season. And hopefully that qualifies him enough for a ring, which would be his third if the Chiefs win, which is kind of wild.
I think it would be. Okay. So we will, well, it's no game next week, obviously, but we'll definitely have a Super Bowl follow-up for you. And gosh, what, I don't know what we'll do in between. Might have to be a bye. Oh, guys, we're going to have so much to talk about with the Pro Bowl then.
The Pro Bowl games. We can watch them play flag football and tug of war. They showed that on TV.
Could be interesting. Why don't they do like a ninja games, right? Like they had the old skill competitions. Now there's ninja games. There's got to be something they can do to kind of blend those up, you know? Maybe he comes down off the cycle zip line, grabs a football, and tries to hit something. I don't know.
Maybe something like in WWE when they do the Money in the Bank and you have like the the case with all the money in it. Like, I feel like that right. Could get some players excited if you had
NFL Royal Rumble.
Absolutely. Of course, you can't injure anybody though.
Well, that's true. Yeah. But I'm telling you, if there was enough money and then they might be willing to.
True. Yes, they would. Cause at that point they know, well, some of them, you know, depending on what their contract situation is, probably could make out better that way. Anyway, so I don't know. We'll be good to see some, because we're going to know some LSU guys are going to be there, right? Now that Jaden's out, I can't imagine that. Oh, actually, Malik Nabers has been added to the NFL Pro Bowl games roster. So we get to see him. We also get to see who might win the NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year, because, my goodness, Tigers got three in the running. So can't wait to see. We think with odds wise, right? It's got to be. But also just with what Jaden's done, how could anyone say they did better than that? I'm talking about Jaden Daniels, Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas, all in Offensive Rookie of the Year nominees. But like, who could say they did something better than Jaden, to be honest?
No, I think he's pretty much got it locked up. Although, yeah, big respect to Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas for showing out as well. Kind of like the second coming of Jamar and Justin Jefferson. So three dynamic duos in the NFL from one school in the span of 5 years is a pretty big accomplishment.
Yeah. And other than that, we do have some basketball to update our listeners on. Now, there has been several games since we last talked. Now, the biggest one, of course, was LSU women versus South Carolina. They did not fare well on that trip. Well, I mean, they did better than last year. I think they only lost by 10 this year, and it wasn't a runaway game like it was last year. I think there's definitely fixable things, especially according to what they said. And Yeah, I think LSU will be fine. It's their first loss of the season, and they already bounced back with a win right after that, taking out A&M. So I don't think that's as – like, the really only controversy about that game was supposedly one of the DJs – or the DJ for South Carolina played Flauje's dad's song after the game, which was just complete disrespect, just kind of taunting her, right? So that's crazy. But I think the Tigers were fair well enough. They've already rebounded. Men, however, I don't know. I think Tommy was the only one that was able to watch that one. But from what I could see, I was kind of following it with social media, just, you know, and checking the game cast. We were doing all right. It was tied at half, 40-40, which is great. And LSU only lost by 7. So that, I think that's – that in itself is totally unexpected. I would say it's an improvement, but, you know, we can play up to good teams, definitely play down to bad ones. So, but again, we're still not good with men's basketball, but I don't know. What do you say?
No, I mean, I would say there's some bad in that game. The good, the one good thing I would take from that, Tre'Dez Green looked really good, came in. You know, the dual sport athlete, we saw him really show out or in the bowl game as a tight end. Well, he comes in, this was his first, I believe his first appearance on the court for LSU after reporting to, reported, practiced with the team for a couple of weeks and got some minutes against Alabama, comes in, has a really, really nasty block and then takes it down the court, slams it for probably the biggest highlight of the entire game for LSU
season.
Maybe for the season. I was very impressed by that. On the other end, I mean, LSU just looks sloppy and it's just, I don't really know if they have like I was watching it, I was just missing, you know, the LSU teams we used to have, like with Tremont Waters and Skylar Mays and, you know, some of those teams where it felt like they had an identity. It felt like you kind of knew what they were going to be able to, what they were going to do when they came out. With this team, I just did not feel like there was really much of anything. They threw up a lot of shots that didn't make any sense. And then the fouls. There were some really, really sloppy fouls. You know, LSU did play them close, and they, like you said, they kept it to close at half. But and Daniel, you mentioned this. You know, Bama actually sat Kai Spears, who's one of their top players. He sat for the entire second half. They said and they didn't really mention why, but but anyway, so it wasn't like a complete win for Bama, and that's one that you kind of think, man, LSU could have really stolen one, and you know, from one of the best teams in the country. Unfortunately, they did not. And after that LSU game, I turned on and watched the end of Auburn and Tennessee, which was a really, really good game. And I mean, that's a number one versus, I believe, number five in the nation at the time. And it just shows you how good the SEC is. The SEC not top to bottom. I mean, we're at the bottom, but majority of the SEC is, you know, very elite basketball competition. And so we, after watching our game and then watching Tennessee and Auburn, I'm kind of like, man, we have no chance at all. And, I feel like I kind of lost even more faith. Whatever faith I had in Matt McMahon, I kind of lost even more of it.
Yeah, I wasn't able to watch the game, but just checking the box score against Alabama, the thing that stands out to me was LSU going 3-for-23 from the 3-point line, shooting 13%. It's hard to win a lot of games when you miss 20 of your 23 threes, especially in the SEC against a team like Alabama, who's kind of built a reputation off of being kind of that hot, sharp shooting team. And that's transitioned to a lot of the league across the SEC. Things don't really get any easier for the Tigers as they play number one in the land, Auburn. It is at home, but that's coming up in 2 days on Wednesday. So maybe tune in on the SEC Network to see if LSU can shock the world in the PMAC against number one Auburn, but I wouldn't think it's too likely.
And I don't know if you watch any of Auburn's games, but they have this thing it's like they're saying, it's like they go call God and they put their phone, like they make their hand into a phone and put it up their ear. And I think if LSU's going to have a chance, they better call God. That's the only thing that's going to help them.
Call somebody.
Right. You call somebody like the transfer portal, maybe. I don't know. I would say maybe why. We got all these different guys from the portal. They just haven't gelled. There hasn't been any time, but I don't know. It's not stopping Vanderbilt. They were kind of in a similar situation as us. They've already beat South Carolina, beat Tennessee, beat Kentucky on Saturday. So I don't know. Matt McMahon just hasn't found that other gear. I don't know. I still say maybe there's probably another coach in the state that could take over if Matt can't get it going, because we are on what, year three now. So
I'm telling you the things that it makes me really miss the Will Wade days. Those were some good days on the hard court for Tigers.
Yeah, because even if we weren't like winning national championships or making Final Fours, like we were at least competitive in the SEC and we could give a game to everybody. And you know there was going to be some high-octane offense. There was going to be some Will Wade blow-ups on the sideline.
There was going to be some intrigue and interest and something to watch. I mean, I just don't feel like there's much of anything with this team. I mean, it's just a team. It's just like five guys get on the court and kind of run around after a basketball. There's not, you know... There's not some real gusto to this team.
Yeah.
Or to this program.
So, but why though? Because there's a reason we brought Matt here. It couldn't have just been because of this one breakout player that he had, right? Morant, that went to the pro. He had, like, I remember Murray State always, you know, they've made the tournament plenty of times. I think he's had very good showing. So it's like, how does it not, like, what's missing? What doesn't
change? Well, I think when they hired Matt McMahon, they were going from the Will Wade circus, if you want to call it that. And then they wanted to settle down and get it kind of a professional guy who's going to go by the numbers. And that was kind of Matt McMahon. He's done well at Murray State, led them to the tournament. He did more with less there. And so they're thinking, well, if he picked up Murray State, this tiny school, what can he do at LSU with a lot more resources and fan base behind that? And he went from doing more with less to less with more, unfortunately, at LSU. It seemed kind of the stage was too big, and he couldn't adapt his small ball fundamentals type of game to SEC play, where you need real dynamic athletes to win you one-on-one matchups night in and night out. And that kind of translated to the recruiting as well, where he's picked up some decent recruits, but nobody, I would say, within like the top 50 or so. And that's what you need. You need these freshmen who will really elevate your game, bring fans into the stadium. And that's kind of led to a slow decline in enthusiasm and kind of spark for the team. And you can see that translating on the court. So it's kind of a vicious cycle and a downhill spiral, which is sad to say. And I don't really have any good suggestions as how to dig our way out, but that's kind of my assessment on how things have gone over the last 3 years.
There was some real splash to the Will Wade. You know, like he was always going to bring some, you know, talented players that were exciting to watch, had a little edge to them. And, you know, just like you said, Daniel, it doesn't feel like we haven't recruited well. And I mean, this is not necessarily Matt McMahon's fault, but the SEC, the rest of the league has just taken leaps and bounds ahead of you. So, you know, that, and like I said, it's not really his fault, but it's the reality. And LSU's being left in the dust.
Mm-hmm. We are, but as other teams have shown, you can always turn it around. It's like Auburn hasn't been good until recently. Tennessee wasn't as good as they were until, I'd say, within the last, I don't know, 10 or so, maybe 12 years. It's like Florida was really great. They were like, the premier team next to Kentucky, who's completely fallen off, by the way. Arkansas used to be great, not as much with Calipari now, which is ironic, but it's like there's all these transgressions. LSU's never been a basketball destination. Maybe that's what Will Wade was able to do, was talk to guys and or give him a strong-ass offer, which at the time is illegal, but now it isn't. So, yeah, why not? It's like you would think if you were in the Tiger Athletic, instead of just focusing all on football, hey, bring in one transformational basketball player, right? Like a Tremont Waters or a Shaquille O'Neal, who you could build something around and go from there. But I don't think there's any interest there because they don't see us as a basketball school. We're obviously not trying to make that our priority. So it is what it is, right?
Until yeah, it seems like it's going to be a long rebuild if it ever happens. I say ever, yeah. But hopefully in the next 5 years. But even that's a long time frame to sit and wait. Because if we fire Matt McMahon to the end of this year, then we're kind of back in square one with whoever we end up next year. And it's like, oh, give this guy 2 or 3 years. So it's easier said than done, but a long process to be waiting on.
I don't know. I mean, bring him back. You bring back, everything is forgiven. We've all moved on.
You better start writing letters to
Scott. Yeah, exactly. Bruce Pearl is the perfect example. And now look at Auburn. I mean, what's going to be really frustrating. And I think Daniel, you mentioned it last week, that Will Wade next few years, at least maybe in the next year, Will Wade will be coaching for a major D1 program. I think that's fair to say. I think it's probably accurate. How do you think Tennessee feels with Bruce Pearl coaching the number one team in the nation at Auburn, you know, a cross conference rival? I feel like we can't let that, or we at least we shouldn't let that happen. He had something good going on here. It's now legal to do what he was doing before. Like, let him come back and do it himself. That's my speech.
Sure, I agree. There's other examples in other sports too, like Bobby Petrino. You know, dude fell off. Hugh Freeze, he had to take a step back. Lane Kiffin, it happens. I don't know why we're stuck.
Sarkisian.
Yeah. So, yeah, that should not be the issue. But I know Scott Woodward, if he wants it done, it'll get done. But I don't know. Maybe there's something else there that he knows that we aren't privy to. Who knows? It'd be great if we could know that, but I don't think we are. So, yeah, who is that next person? Yeah, I get it. Matt McMahon's the straight edge guy, the country club guy that'll bring us back to a certain standard, at least. You know, we're not going to have accusations, penalizations, things like that, but I mean, we're also not going to win at men's basketball. But again, if that's not our focus, no problem. No harm, no foul. We'll wait for baseball to come out. They actually started their scrimmages in Baton Rouge this weekend. Saw a lot of good stuff, a lot of good video coming out. I think probably the biggest issue, other than, you know, how do we replace all these guys that left, is how do you find out the guys where you want to put them all? Because man, LSU's got so much talent that came back, that came up in the system, that transferred in. We have plenty of time to talk about it. I just wanted to mention it because I think it's all pretty much everything kind of revolves around football except for baseball, at least at LSU, because baseball is it's a statue for us. And that will always be its own thing. Yeah, we might watch the L game in between, but it's baseball season. So I'm excited. What about you guys?
Well, Baseball America is kind of the premier college baseball writing organization. They do the top 25. They just came out with their preseason top 25 this week, and it had the LSU Tigers at number 2 overall, just behind Texas A&M, defending champion, and then ahead of Tennessee, Arkansas, and Virginia in the top 5. So number 2 in the country, lofty expectations, but I think reasonable. Even though we got bumped out in just a regional last year, it wasn't a super deep run for us, but the talent is definitely there. And yeah, hopes are high. I saw a little stat sheet on LSU's pitchers, and their kind of max velocity. And we've got 11 guys that can throw 95 or higher, which is kind of insane. So could be coming out flame throwing. We had high hopes for the pitching staff last year, and then that was a little bit of a weak spot, especially in the bullpen. But if we can convert some of these guys into solid week in, week out starters, then we definitely have the pop on offense to make a run at it this year. So yeah, excited and looking forward to seeing what the Tigers can do coming up next month.
Agreed. We're 3 weeks away. First game is Valentine's Day, February 14th. So, I mean, I'm excited for it. I'm ready to watch our Tigers take the field in the box.
Yeah, and then those first few weeks of baseball, they always kind of play some cupcake teams in the box, and it's not as entertaining, I would say, as a weekend SEC series, but it is kind of fun when you see that like 17-2 box score and LSU just walloping them. And although sometimes I can get your expectations a little higher than they need to be, but yeah, hoping for some bear bombs and some. I guess that's all we got. We don't really have no Tommy Tanks anymore, sadly.
We have a Luis Hernandez behind the plate who, I don't know, it's one thing Jerry Jones was saying. Yeah, it's like we're replacing a lot of bats, but from what he's seen, we've got some guys that could at least step in somewhat, like him. Then you have Stanfield that came in from Auburn. I think he hit one out this weekend. And yeah, the other side of that is obviously our battery, you know, the pitchers that are still here. I think Gavin Guidry's still probably trying to push for some starting time, trying to, you know, max out his innings. But I don't know, man. I think he's so obviously crucial as a late relief closer or just a saver in general. So we'll see. Plenty of time to talk about that. Probably next week when we don't have any football to discuss except for our Super Bowl previews, which we will happily give you. Although I did want to mention one thing since we're on LSU baseball. It's obviously still way preseason in pro baseball, but Paul Skeens, did y'all see the story about this kid that somehow pulled one out of one Paul Skeens rookie baseball card?
Yeah, I've been keeping track on this story for a little while, and it was kind of the number one chase card in the Topps kind of premier edition of baseball cards this year. It was his rookie card, and what made it so special was that it was the MLB debut card, which all the rookie players in their very first game of the season, they wore a special MLB debut patch on their sleeve, and then Topps, I guess, had an agreement with the MLB where then they sliced that off the jersey and put it in a card, one of one. So only one card has this patch that Paul Skeens wore in his first ever game. So that's what makes it like so awesome, and he signed it autograph as well. So this is like the premier Paul Skeens and baseball card just in general of this year. And so there had been the big hunt for this, and the set's been out for a few months, and these debut patches of other players have been getting pulled, but the Skeens was still out there. Everybody's like, where is it? And then there was kind of a bounty on it. So the Pittsburgh Pirates were saying, whoever pulls it, you give it to us and we'll give you 30 years of season tickets behind home plate and a few other incentives like meet and greet with Paul Skeens, autograph memorabilia, et cetera, et cetera. And then it finally pops up this past week in California, apparently an 11-year-old hobbyist enthusiast had pulled it out of the box, and that was the big news. And so it was like, was he going to trade it into the Pirates for these season tickets, or is he going to try and sell it, or is he going to try and keep it? And then like one day later, bam, it comes back graded a perfect PSA 10, which is the best you can get. Perfect 10 on the card and the autograph, which is pretty rare and only increases the value to even higher level. And so there was a little bit of suspicions, like what's going on here? Did this 11-year-old kid really pull this after all these crazy sports card nuts are digging through box after box? And then it gets a perfect 10, obviously. And then he decided he's not going to sell it and just go into auction. I'm not entirely sure when it's going to be auctioned, but some people were trying to do the math of like how much the season tickets would be worth. And I think most people are coming out with around $1 million. Like if he can get over $1 million, then he kind of made his money, or else in my opinion, I think he should sell it because the story is true and it is an 11-year-old kid, he's living in California. He's not a Pittsburgh Pirates fan. He would have to like somehow sell off the tickets like one by one over 30 years. That's a kind of a tough deal to do.
Taking on a full-time job just to broker these tickets.
He could work for himself for StubHub and probably make a living that way. That would be a, that would be interesting. I'd love to, that's like a money ball for like an 11-year-old.
So, yeah. So I'd tell him, take the money and run. And hopefully it all works out. I'm interested to see what it does sell for, when it goes on auction here relatively soon. But the, all the rest of the cards in the set are now worth much less because everybody was trying to find this one. But yeah, big, big deal. And I guess it gives testament to how dominant Skeens was as a rookie and what people expect from him going forward. So good to see LSU represented by such a great athlete, both at LSU and in the pros. End of story.
Absolutely. And I mean, the dude was only here, what, one good year, and he still comes back. He'll come back to football games, baseball games. Like, he's a, I guess, an ambassador of LSU. I don't know if it has something to do with his hot girlfriend that's also on the gymnastics team, but he still comes back and promotes. So it's good to see that. Yeah, I don't know if that was my 11-year-old. I would say, yeah, make the business decision. Because unless he was already a diehard Skeens fan and I was from Pittsburgh, heck no. What am I going to do with season tickets?
2,000
miles away.
What is this kid going to do with the season tickets to? But I don't know. It was a cool story.
Yeah, well, I think some of these kind of big memorabilia items, people have kind of learned their lessons, because there was a lot of this stuff with like big home run balls, like Shohei Ohtani's like 50-50 home run ball, or I forget some other ones, maybe like
Mark McGwire's
Barry Bonds 70 home run or something, where the team they'll try and like whichever fan catches the balls, like, instead of, you give us the ball and you can meet Barry Bonds and he'll autograph a baseball bat for you and stuff. And then kind of in the heat of the moment, you're like, wow, that's cool. I get to meet my hero and I get to go to a game with them.
And they'll do it. Like, they'll come at, you'll be sitting in the stands and they'll come to you and be like that, like there, like you're sitting there watching the game. They're like, oh, wow, I just caught this. And they're coming to you trying to like get you to give it to them.
Right. And then so some people have kind of fallen for that and they give them the ball back or the sports card or whatever. And then the ball goes to auction eventually or whatever and sells for $1 million. It's like, it is a visit with Barry Bonds really worth $1 million? I think people have started to shy away from the team's offers. So they've had to kind of bump them up a little bit, kind of like these season ticket stuff, which is getting more into the realm of possibility. But it would really only work if like a diehard Pittsburgh Pirates fan pulled the card, which is pretty unlikely.
Pretty unlikely. If that's me and I'm in that outfield and that's the record that's on the line, if we catch that home ball, you can guarantee me and my daughter already have some Ziploc bags on us that we're going to double bag this baseball, save it, take it out of Turner Field, tell them thanks but no thanks. I'll still meet Acuna. My daughter would love to meet him.
We can meet him. It'll be cool.
Yeah, that's fine, but I'm taking the ball with me. Because
you gotta fight all the other crazies in the stadium who are trying to jump on you and rip it out of your hands and stuff. Like, they don't care at all.
Right. So it's like your first call is, I don't know, I would say security, but no, he's probably calling a lawyer, you know, kind of like a lottery ticket. But yeah, how do you get out of the stadium? I guess after that, you got to leave, right? Unless you already have a disguise on, because everyone in that stadium is going to see you catch that ball.
Well, yeah. That situation will probably never happen to me, unfortunately.
Yeah, none of us really. Probably not.
Yeah, it never happened to Daniel because he has the best seats. He doesn't sit in the outfield.
I'm up in the penthouse suite dining with the owner.
I thought you were going to say you're behind home plate where these kids' tickets were going to be, and you're never going to catch a home run ball because you're just going to get the straight pop ups. But you have unlimited hot dog buffet, so there's that. I guess
I'm up in the fourth deck bleachers of the Yankee Stadium where the real fans sit.
I don't know. Would you go to? Wait, are the Marlins still in Miami? Is that still? I haven't.
They are, them. And I have not been to a game. I've been kind of trying to go because, like you said, that they never sell out. The tickets are like $2.
That's awesome.
So maybe worth a weekend trip.
It's you went to spring training though, right?
Yeah. Where I live is right by where they have a lot of the spring training fields. So I have gone to spring training. It's actually pretty fun. It's very popular. It's coming up very soon here, but they like literally sell out the stadium with all these people. It's a lot of like, because they have the St. Louis Cardinals, their team, they play spring training. So it's all these Northern fans. Like, we might as well come down to Florida and make a vacation out of it and see the Cardinals while we're doing it. So there's a lot of fans. And I've seen some, like, I saw Kramer Robertson play last year for the Cardinals, which is kind of cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. Franchises like the Cardinals, they follow, like, that's their thing. That is their life. They're, you know, kind of like hockey fans follow that. People that follow the Cardinals, they will go down to spring training. They will pack all their PTO and put it to go watch the spring training. Right. They don't care. And that's their thing, which is great. So that's why you're always, yeah, these stadiums are absolutely packed. You got all these teams with all these diehard fans. I don't know. It'd be great if it was like that for other sports or teams. But anyway, yeah, I don't know. I guess Joe Brady's not going to be at the Saints. So much for my prediction. The search goes on, although it looks pretty dire. Like, if this guy that used to coach with you, like, you know, I don't even want to go down there for an interview. I'm good. Thank you. You know?
Yeah, the Saints are just a dumpster fire. It's terrible.
What are you going to do?
I have no idea, but I'm glad. That makes me glad that we're not a Saints podcast.
We're so close. So close.
At least LSU wins some games.
Exactly. Yeah, really. Exactly. They have a little bit more stability in with their coaching too. Although, I mean, Peyton was there for a long time, probably as long as Miles was, right? Just eventually ran its course. But I don't know. I think they probably could have found something to work. Anywho, I think that might about do it for us today, although unless you guys have something else, do mention it.
No, it's a good wrap. Touched on a lot of stuff, but yeah, hope everybody has a good week.
Tommy's good.
I'm good. Yeah, that's it for me.
He's satisfied.
Silence is golden.
Yeah. All right. Well, that will officially do it for us here on Talking Tigs. Tune in next week. We'll have our Super Bowl preview, as well as any follow-ups to any other LSU action this week, basketball, otherwise, portal. I don't even know if that's open yet, but that too. So until then, everyone stay safe. Also, stay tuned, and we will talk to you again right here on Talking Tigs.